Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network calling, and this is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, in the bunker right here in beautiful north central Indiana, where it the leaves are almost half off of the trees. Some of them are hanging on there pretty good. Beautiful out here with all these golden yellow leaves piling up on my yard. Beautiful day, sunshiny here in the Midwest, and really nice. Well, enough of this frivolity. Let's move on. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Thank you for the early birds who get their donations in early. We appreciate that. And so if you're behind and if you're behind and not caught up, I'm afraid we're going to have to put you by the wayside. However, most people, when they get behind and I remind them, they're behind, they catch up. Because where in the hell are you going to get the information you get on this show? You know you're not going to get it from the right wing. You might get a little bit of it from the right wing. You're not going to get it from the left wing. You can get a little bit of it from the left wing. And you're not going to get it right out in the open, and we don't pull any punches here, as you are well informed of that. Don't forget our big website up there. Tell everybody to go on up there and get educated, and everybody goes up there, send in a dollar every time you go up there. That would help out a lot. I think I'm going to have to put that ad on the front of the webpage. Hey, free speech ain't free, baby. It costs money to run a website every month. And we've got volunteer help out there a little bit. She-Wolf there in Southern California maximizes our help and gets the job done. It don't take a lot of people, but it takes people who are going to get the job done, pure and simple. One thing I want to get across to everybody is this. I am not a white nationalist. I get sick and tired of hearing white nationalists. Of course, they say that instead of saying I'm a white racist. But beyond being a white racial separatist, you should be a pan-Aryanist. In other words, your interest is in the well-being of white people worldwide. We're not only a shrinking population here in North America, we're a shrinking population all over the world. And we don't have time to fuss around with nationalism. In fact, nationalism has caused the death of more white people than any other idea, really, even more than communism, which in reality was nothing but state capitalism. So I hear people arguing all the time. There are people who always wanting to get me into an argument, which is actually based on nationalism. Whether you're pro-Putin and you like the Russians, or you're pro-American and you like the United States, all that kind of stuff. That is not what I'm interested in, even though that's fine as long as you incorporate it into pan-Aryanism. And that's how I decided to go against the Cold War, was when the satellite dishes came in and I was selling them. And I was able to see wild feeds out of the Soviet Union, see the people on the streets of Moscow and so forth. And I looked at those people and I said, what the hell's going on here? We don't want these people to be our enemy. We want to be their friends. And if we have an atomic war, we're going to kill off the northern hemisphere, which will include the white Russians, the white Europeans, and the white Americans. So this Cold War shit and this saber-rattling by the military-industrial complex is nonsense. And ever since that, I've totally changed my mind. So when anybody says, I'm a white nationalist, well, you are? Well, why not be a white separatist? Oh, okay, I'll be a white separatist. Well, then, why not be a pan-Aryanist and be concerned with white people all over the world? And forget this nationalism, which is an very old and worn out occupation. Well, it's another Sling Blade Day. Oh, he's went by different names, of course, over the years. I forget what he's going to call himself today, but it may not be Sling Blade. But that's all right. You know who he is. And sometimes we have a disagreement, but usually not. And right now he's on sabbatical. Since his house flooded over there in Illinois, I haven't heard hide nor hair of him. So I don't know what he's doing, but luckily for us, we've got tons of back shows that Sling Blade has made. Unfortunately, these shows were not, the dates were not put on them. So if you hear something that's out of date or it's been surpassed by something else, just understand that and forget about it, because some of the electronic stuff we talk about is a little bit passe now. So without further ado, here comes the man with the big machete, Sling Blade.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the very first show of Radio Insurgent. Radio Insurgent will come across very much like Ghost Wolf Radio. Who knows, maybe I should still call it Ghost Wolf Radio. My name is Michael Myers, and I'm your host. I want to thank our sponsors, the Insurgency Radio Network, headed up by Tom Metzger. Today, I want to do some reading out of the Mini Manual of the Urban Guerrilla by Carlos Marighella. I'm not real sure on the Portuguese pronunciation of his last name, but be that as it may, let's go on. Sometimes when you hear the word werewolf or guerrilla or insurgent or whatever, I'm going to use some of our own vernacular. Okay, the urban guerrilla is a person who fights the military dictatorship with weapons using unconventional methods. The revolutionary and an ardent patriot, he is a fighter for his country's liberation, a friend of the people, and of freedom. We're not a friend of the people right now, and I don't think that's something we should worry about either. We're not building big cells right now. Hopefully we're building just a lot of courage doing our individual acts of sabotage or whatever we're involved with. So, he's a fighter for his country's liberation. Make no mistake about it. Americans are probably some of the most enslaved people in the world. We're enslaved. I mean, our prison's a mental prison. We suffer under the illusion that we're free, but we're really not. The area in which the urban guerrilla operates is in large American cities. There are also criminals or outlaws who work in big cities. Many times, actions by criminals are taken to be actions by urban guerrillas. The urban guerrilla, however, differs basically from the criminal, or radically from the criminal. The criminal benefits personally from his actions and attacks indiscriminately without distinguishing between the exploiters and the exploited. Well, lone wolves do that too. He should get something out of his actions, whether that be monetary gain, revenge, or just the need to destroy something. All right, which is why there are so many ordinary people among his victims. I don't think ordinary people will be among our victims if we ever become truly revolutionary. Because it's not out of the realm of possibility of the United States being occupied by a foreign power. There's a lot of people talking about the United States is actually letting Chinese companies come into the heartland. They have a bottled water facility deep in the woods of Michigan. They say they're draining so much water out of Great Lakes that the level's gone down because nature cannot replace what's being taken. And that water is being shipped out to the West Coast, and there are barges with these huge rubber type of balloons. They can tie, you know, 10 of them in a row, carrying millions and millions of gallons of water, and they're taking it to China. I've heard about this. Don't know if it's true, but I've heard it from a number of sources. The aquifers in China are being drained. They built these Three Gorges Dam, the big dam or whatever. And I guess that water has been cut off to the peasant living out in the field, just scraping a living. I just found out recently that China did that as a measure of control over their own people. And that's what it's about, worldwide. Whether it be Hu Jintao of China or Barack Obama of the United States, it's all about control. But in our case, the person on the throne is nothing but a hand puppet. And these hand puppets change every 4 years. So it's time we start looking at the puppet masters. And your puppet masters are on Wall Street and the Federal Reserve and the CEOs of transnational corporations. Okay. Which is why so many ordinary people are among his victims. The urban guerrilla follows a political goal and only attacks the government, big business, and foreign imperialists. Another element just as harmful to the guerrillas as the criminal, and also operating in urban areas, is the counter-revolutionary, who creates confusion, robs banks, throws bombs, kidnaps, assassinates, and commits the worst crimes imaginable against urban guerrillas, revolutionaries, priests, students, and citizens who oppose tyranny. I would like to add a certain caveat to that, and that would be that counter-revolutionary can do the same thing that I just suggested or that I just read, and posing as guerrilla, posing as ghost wolves to discredit us. If you're in a radio club and you think that 9/11 was not an inside job, then you're somebody who will sit at home and hear about some major atrocity being supposedly committed by white racists, and you'll believe it. And that will definitely put a wall up between you and possibly becoming allied with a revolutionary racial movement. All the world's a stage, and we are nothing but players. John F. Kennedy wanted to pull the survivors out of Vietnam. He didn't get into a shooting war with Cuba. The military-industrial complex was very pissed off about that. You want to look at false flag operations? Go to Google and type in Operation Northwoods. It's been declassified. The government, not only the United States, but other governments around the world will use false flags, will kill their own population, just so more draconian laws can be passed in their own land. You heard on the flip side of this tape, hopefully you hear this in order, in the Capitol's conspiracy, talking about how the pressure from above and pressure from below is used to create chaos and anarchy in the streets, because most people want to live in peace, and they'll do anything to live in peace, including giving up their civil liberties. You can sit on your ass all you want to. I'm not talking about you, Radio Club listeners, just anyone out there in particular. And not do anything. It's not going to change. We cannot vote the right people in power. They control that too. They control who's going to be in the White House. Your vote has absolutely no control. All right. The urban guerrilla is an implacable enemy of the government and systematically inflicts damage on the authorities and on the people who dominate the country and exercise power. The primary task of the urban guerrilla is to distract, to wear down, to demoralize the military-industrial complex and its repressive forces, and also to destroy and attack the wealth and property of foreign managers and the American ruling class. The property of foreign managers. China's buying up a lot of shit in this country. I'd like to see all those assets go up in smoke. I'm not telling you guys to go out there and do it, I'm just saying. The urban guerrilla is not afraid to dismantle and destroy the present American economic, political, and social system. For his aim is to aid the rural guerrillas, we won't have those, and to help in creation of a totally new revolutionary social and political structure. Who knows? We may have rural guerrillas. Guerrillas out in the farms and out in the woods. Well, I mean, the family farm is gone. What is it, 2% of all farming now is family farms? It's all corporate farming now. Archer Daniels, Midland Group, Monsanto, Smithfield, Tyson, Cargill. By the way, every time you hear the word American, it's actually the word Brazilian in here. Carlos Marighella wrote this in 1969 when it was more of a socialist uprising against the Brazilian upper class because of inequalities and wealth. I believe in wealth redistribution, absolutely. But I don't want it to come from the middle class. I want it to come from the super rich. There was a story on 60 Minutes last night about the coming Day of Reckoning, it was called. How a lot of state governments are bankrupt. And they had Governor Christie on there from New Jersey, and they talked to Dan Hines, a state comptroller in Illinois. Illinois, I guess, is worse off than California. That surprised me. You know, but they said they had to come across like the enemy of all this was the pensions of the state and city municipal workers. I want to run this by Metzger, but something does not sound right to me about that. Something is not right with that. I just don't buy that. There are people who have taken our jobs out of the country. They should get the shit taxed out of them. They should get heavy tariffs for their products to come back in this country. It should be financially not worth their while to build a factory in Mexico. I wonder how many of you guys saw that episode last night at 60 Minutes. But they're talking about, oh, we're going to have to do something. We're going to have to close down these nursing homes, and we're going to have to lay off, you know, millions of state workers. No. How about Bill Gates and Warren Buffett pay a shitload more taxes? Obama signs the tax cuts. See, look at the timing of everything. Obama signs the tax cut thing. And then he overturns Don't Ask, Don't Tell. With both of those things, he's made the far left and the far right happy. It's all a game. Stop looking at the puppet who's in the Oval Office for 4 years, sometimes 8 years. You start looking at the puppet masters. Take a nice good look at them. Look at them through an optical that has a crosshair in it. No, I'm just kidding. No, we don't believe in violence. Absolutely not. The urban guerrilla is not afraid to dismantle and destroy the present American economic, political social system, for his aim is to aid the rural guerrillas and help in the creation of a totally new and revolutionary social and political structure with the armed population in power. Well, basically he's talking about switching out one tyranny for another. In the French Revolution, the people became the tyranny. Mobs suck. In some aspect, I believe in depopulation. There are a lot of useless eaters on the planet. I do not see myself as one of them. And the elderly white man who sent me $20, the 73 elderly white man in Auburn Hills, New York. Is it Auburn Hills, California? See, I know what city he's from, or where the postage came out of, but I'm not going to say. But he has a wife with Alzheimer's. I don't want him sending me no money. Sir, you're a great man for even considering that. So you got enough on your plate. You don't need to do that. But you, sir, are not a useless eater. We need to take care of elderly white people like you. But Jose and Maria need to either go back to Mexico or get fucking killed so we can take care of our people. I don't want you guys to go out there and do it. I'm definitely not going to do it. And the FBI can't say, you're yelling fire in a crowded theater. No, I'm not. I'm being very vague in my shit. The personal qualities of the urban guerrilla. The urban guerrilla is characterized by his bravery and his decisive nature. He must be a good tactician and a good marksman. The urban guerrilla must be a person of great cleverness and to compensate for the fact that he is not sufficiently strong in weapons, ammunition, and equipment. The career military officers and the government police have modern weapons and transport and can go about anywhere freely, using the force of their own strength. The urban guerrilla does not have such resources at his disposal and leads a clandestine existence. The guerrilla may be a convicted person or one who is put on parole and must then use false documents. Nevertheless, the werewolf has a disadvantage over the conventional military or the police. It is that while the military and the police act on behalf of the enemy, whom the people hate, the urban guerrilla defends a just cause, which is the people's cause. Talk about personal qualities. Werewolf, ghost wolf, white insurgent, and adherent to Radio Rahoa. Radio Rahoa. Ghost Wolf Radio, Radio Rahoa. It'll knock your ass out like Rocky Balboa. We're about to blow our stack like our name was Krakatoa. You better secure a position on that ark by calling that fucking Jew named Noah. Anyways, going on. Says the urban guerrilla's weapons are inferior to the enemy's, but from a moral point of view, the urban guerrilla has an undeniable superiority. His moral superiority is what sustains the werewolf. Remember, white men out there, you have the moral high ground. The moral superiority is what sustains the urban guerrilla. Thanks to it, the urban guerrilla can accomplish his principal duty, which is to attack and survive. The urban guerrilla has to capture or steal weapons from the enemy to be able to fight, because his weapons are not uniform, since what he has are expropriated or have fallen into his hands in various ways. You know, I don't know if they're coming out with that yet. We got to keep an eye on what kind of weaponry is being developed. As you know, they got guns that can shoot around corners now. That's right. You know, it's like it can shoot around the corner while the gunner can remain still around the other side of the corner without exposing his body. He's looking into a little screen that's off to, like, you know, like these digital cameras, or not digital cameras, but like a camcorder. You know, you've got the screen off to the left or whatever, right? Well, but they got weapon systems with that now. So I also heard that they were going to try and match like a cop's gun, his handgun, to his handprint. And if anyone else picks up that gun, it won't be able to fire. This is shit they're working on, man. So if you think we're going to be able to storm the castle with pitchforks and fucking staves in the 2050s, you're wrong. We can't even do that now. They're developing stuff where you can look at someone from far away and look at their brain waves and see how their brain waves are heating up. You can tell if they're stressed or if they're nervous, all kinds of shit. Anyways. Alright, his weapons are not uniform because he steals them. And whatever falls into his hands are various weapons of various kinds. But, like I said before, the most ubiquitous round out there for law enforcement is 40mm or 9mm. 40mm. 40 caliber. Anyways. Alright, these difficulties have to be overcome, forcing the urban guerrillas to be imaginative and creative qualities without which it would be impossible for him to carry out his role as a revolutionary. The urban guerrilla must possess initiative, mobility, flexibility, as well as versatility. Versatility. Illiterate speak. Okay. And a command of any situation. Initiative, especially, is an indispensable quality. It is not always possible to foresee everything. And the urban guerrilla cannot let himself become confused or wait for instructions. His duty is to act, to find adequate solutions for each problem he faces, and to retreat. It's better to err acting than to do nothing for fear of making a mistake. Without initiative, there is no urban guerrilla warfare. Other important qualities in the werewolf are the following. You should be able to walk long distances, guys. Metzger does it every day. You should be able to stand up to fatigue, hunger, rain, heat, cold. So cold outside now, being December 19th, freeze the balls off a brass monkey. To know how to hide, to know how to be vigilant, to conquer the art of dissembling. Never to fear danger. Conquer the art of dissembling means basically to swim in the sea of the people. And if your little group has to break up into smaller groups to avoid detection, you need to know how to do that. To behave the same by day as by night, not act impetuously. To have unlimited patience, to remain calm, cool in the worst of conditions and situations. Never to leave a track or trail. Not to get discouraged. Yeah, we have to fight against getting discouraged. It's easy for us to think that, you know, that the odds are against us out there. And they are, but remember, we have this task of eating an elephant. Well, you're not going to get it done by 12 o'clock today. One bite at a time, comrades. This may be something your children's children are going to be struggling with. So pass on the struggle. That's the best thing you can do for your kids. Pass on the struggle. You know, I saw something on the internet over the weekend. And I'm trying to remember who it was by, but basically they're saying it is not good for human beings to have everything they've ever wanted. When our ancestors struggled and strived for so much, it made them better human beings to struggle. You know? You know, our brains developed. You know, we back in prehistoric times, our brains had to conjure up weapons to fight off predatory animals, to deal with the environment, especially white people. I don't believe for a second the out of Africa theory. I just don't. I just, something's not right about it. I refuse to believe that my ancestors 100,000 years ago were black. I just don't buy it. There are so many different hominid species out there, you know, that so many different primate species. You got monkeys that are only 11 inches tall. And you got gorillas that weigh 600 pounds. You know? All right. Didn't mean to go off on a tangent, but in the face of the most insurmountable difficulties in urban guerrilla warfare, sometimes comrades weaken and give up the fight. Yeah, I heard that there was this guy named Dave in the National Alliance who lived with a guy I knew named Corey. I think Corey told me this guy left the struggle and was living with a black girl. The fuck is wrong with you? Anyways, we're going to attract people like that that have absolutely no business being with us. And if you're part of an organization, you know, Metzger says all the time, look at the animal kingdom. You know, he's right about that because, I mean, take some examples from the animal kingdom. You got a pack of wolves or a pack of dogs. Even the weakest dog that couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag will at least get scraps that the other dogs leave behind when they take down a kill. But a lone wolf, or a ghost wolf, or a couple of wolves have to work hard to bring down that fucking moose or that elk in order to eat. It's the same thing with our struggle. Big organizations will attract weak people. And if you get enough weak people around, how can it not affect you? We don't want the weak people. So, take the lessons from the animal kingdom. The urban gorilla is not a businessman, although in our situation he can be. In an urban company, he could be. Nor is he an actor in a play. He could be. Urban guerrilla warfare, like rural guerrilla warfare, is a pledge with the gorilla, which the gorilla makes to himself. That's fine. He can still swim in the sea to people, take part in everyday life, be a member of the PTA, all that stuff, and still be a hardcore white revolutionary. In fact, that would be great. When he can no longer face the difficulties, or if he knows that he lacks the patience to wait, then it is better for him to relinquish his role before he betrays his pledge. For he clearly lacks the basic qualities necessary to be a gorilla. How the urban gorilla lives. The werewolf must know how to live among the people. He must be careful not to appear strange or different from ordinary city life. He should not wear clothes that are different from those that the other people wear. Yeah, if you live in a working class apartment complex, you don't want to, or if you want to scout out a working class apartment complex for purposes of a mission, you're not going to do that in a suit and tie. Elaborate and high fashion clothing for men and women often may often be a handicap if the urban guerrilla's mission takes them into a working class neighborhood or sections where such dress is uncommon. The same care has to be taken if the urban guerrilla must move from the south of the country to the north and vice versa. The urban guerrilla must make a living through his job or his professional activity. If he is known and sought by the police, he must go underground and sometimes must live hidden. Under such circumstances, the urban guerrilla cannot reveal his activity to anyone. Since this information is always and only the responsibility of the revolutionary organization in which he is participating, the urban guerrilla must have a great ability for observation. He must be well informed about everything. Get to know as much as you can, comrades. Particularly about the enemy's movements, he must be very inquisitive and knowledgeable about the area in which he lives, operates, and travels. If you live in a suburb outside of a city, let's say you live in Lowell, Massachusetts, which I guess is just outside of Boston. I just happen to pick Lowell, Massachusetts, because I saw Mark Wahlberg's The Fighter last night. It's a great freaking movie. Great movie. I recommend it. You know, if Christian Bale don't get the best supporting actor, that'd be a travesty, because he played, Mark Wahlberg portrayed Mickey Ward, the Irish Mickey Ward was his moniker, you know, white kid who grew up in Lowell, Massachusetts, and his brother, Dickie Eklund or something like that. There's a reason why they have different last names, but he was always like the big shot in Lowell, and then Mickey started boxing and stuff, but it's a great movie. Great movie. I don't know about this Mark Wahlberg, man. He's been doing movies lately that make white guys look good. I don't know, dude. I'm not saying he's one of us, but he's definitely not the same guy from the Funky Bunch. He's like a wigger back then. I mean, he did the movie Rockstar. You know, and he did a good job with that role, even though he's kind of kidding around at the end of the movie with this fucking West Side and all this other shit. Then he did the movie Invincible, where he played Vince Papale, a guy who grew up in Philadelphia and got to play with the Philadelphia Eagles. And it was great watching him outrun these black guys. He was fucking competing with professional football players for a spot on the fucking roster. And I love his one part where he outran these two black guys, and Mark Wahlberg looks over his shoulder, look at these two black guys looking at each other like, man, this fucking white boy's fast. I love that shit. Yep. Watched a little bit of New England Patriots last night, played the Green Bay Packers. And it was a Sunday night football game, and I was watching it with my brother-in-law. And you know, when the team that has the ball is on offense, they do a real quick introduction to who's on offense. They have in the lower left-hand corner, they have the actual guy talking. My name is so-and-so. My name is so-and-so from the University of Miami, you know, number 85 or whatever, so, you know. And the New England's offense, I mean, it showed the Green Bay Packers offense, and it's like only two guys or one guy was white. But the New England Patriots, every fucking guy was white on there except, I think, two guys. The entire offensive line is white on the Patriots. And their two tight ends are white, Wes Welker and some other guy. Wes Welker's a good football player. And I'm thinking to myself, holy shit, there's a lot of white guys on that fucking team. And my brother-in-law, who's not racial at all, he's like, wow, every one of those guys was white. And I'm like, wow, you said it the same time I was thinking it. What's that got to do with urban guerrilla? Not a damn thing. So let's go on. Let's continue.
The urban gorilla must make his living through a job, his job, or his professional activity. If he is known and sought by the police, he must go underground and sometimes must live hidden. No shit. Tell me something I don't know, Carlos. Under such circumstances, the werewolf cannot reveal his identity to anyone.
Since this information is always and only the responsibility of the revolutionary organization which he is participating. The urban gorilla must have a great ability for observation. He must be well informed about everything. I've read that. You gotta know about the enemy's movements. Uh-oh, comrades. Michael Myers feels the presence of Monkey Man. I think Monkey Man's gonna make an appearance!
Monkey Man!
Get out of here! I'm fucking doing a show!
Wait!
Get out of here! Close the door!
You know, Tommy, he deals with that fucking Jerry the Jew. The thorn in my side in the studio is fucking Monkey Man. I don't know what to do about him. I've already seen a psychiatrist, and he can't help me. He wanted me to take Zoloft or some shit like that. And lithium. The guy wanted to put me on 3,000 milligrams a day of lithium. I just can't do it. You already got chemtrails dropping aluminum and barium on us. Fucking up the drinking water, killing plant life. Making us more dependent on genetically modified foods. Chemtrails, making it impossible for us to grow our own food someday. Chemtrails are also responsible for the great raging forest fires. In one part, I think it was Hawaii or Colorado or Arizona, I don't know, they found 375,000 parts per million. That is freaking astronomical. But the government says, we're doing this so we can cool off the planet. Global warming is the new religion. It's a way for them to seize control. If you just remember, comrades, that nothing is done by the government or the system or the banks for your benefit. It's all for control. Back to the urban gorilla. But the fundamental characteristic of the urban gorilla is that he is a man who fights with weapons. Right. Given these circumstances, there is very little likelihood that he will be able to follow his normal profession for long without being identified by the police. I disagree with that. Travel far from home and far from work and wear nondescript, uncharacteristic clothing. And it wouldn't help to alter your gait somehow. Fake like you got a limp. Fake like you got a fucking deformed arm. The role of expropriation thus looms clear as high noon. It is impossible for the urban gorilla to exist and survive without fighting to expropriate. Well, you don't have to expropriate now, guys. You can buy all the weapons you want. I just don't foresee a big fucking sweep of your guns, even though you're a registered firearm owner. I just don't see it. They would need the help of maybe the UN to do that. But then again, you get enough people unemployed, and all of a sudden the government says, all right, we're going to stimulate the economy. We need more federal soldiers for Homeland Security. You guys stand in the unemployment line long enough, they'll do that shit. All right, guys, your first mission, go collect the guns in Denver. I'm always thinking of possible scenarios that this shit can play out. I'm not saying I'm going to be right. I'm just always thinking about it. Thus, the armed struggle of the urban guerrilla points towards two essential objectives. the physical elimination of leaders and assistants of the armed forces and of the police, the expropriation of government resources and the wealth belonging to the rich businessmen, landowners, and the imperialists, with small expropriations used for the sustenance of the individual guerrillas and large ones for the maintenance of the revolutionary organization itself. You know, comrades, there's a lot of businesses in this country that are owned by non-whites. In my area, I can't speak for the country, but I mention this so you guys can notice it too. Your 7-Elevens or your White Hen pantries, you know, your convenience stores, hardly any of them are controlled by whites anymore. Your Dunkin' Donuts, your cleaners, you know, where you drop off your suits. You now you got ethnic grocery stores. This one in particular I'm thinking of is, you know, it's in a strip mall that's flanked on both sides by an apartment complex. And I just noticed that there's a lot of Middle Eastern type of people living there in both complexes. That's how you get a gist of what an area is going to be like. If you see some freaking Padesh Kadesh pantry, you know, it's obviously for Hindus or Pakistanis. But, you know, you can't look at it, oh, they're just people working hard, living the American dream. No, that's our dream. Are we laying off more and more people? Making things even tighter? Creating more and more competition? And they're still not doing nothing about the illegal immigration. It's by design that they're trying to destroy us. I truly believe that. Also, I found out over the weekend that the chemtrails are only a phenomenon in the NATO countries. It's only a phenomenon in the northern hemisphere of the world. They showed a map that chemtrails were seen in. And I think there was only maybe two countries in southern, southeastern Europe that they weren't shown in. But they're seen in Canada, the United States, not Mexico. They're seen all over Europe, Scandinavian countries, Russia, and even nations down in the Mediterranean. Could this be right? The Western man has a dropping sperm count? I think it's a combination of a lot of things. So, won't be a bad idea to target them. I hate going to a gun store and seeing non-whites buying guns. I'd love to turn on CNN one day and just hear about a Chinese restaurant just being freaking robbed of everything. Before they had a chance to take the toll of a certain day's money to the bank or a Dropbox, they got it all. And don't forget, Chinese people aren't real big fans of banks. They'll hide large sums of money in their foodstuffs. That is a very Asian thing to do. If you're ever in a situation where it's martial law, it's freaking Mad Max Road Warrior out there, and you break your way into a house that belonged to Asians, well, you'll probably go through the food anyways because you'll be hungry. But they'll hide shit there. They'll hide shit in the radiators and ceiling tiles. All right, one in a fundamental characteristics of the American Revolution is that from the beginning it developed around the expropriation of wealth of the major businesses. Wealth of the major business, imperialist, and landowning interest. I'm talking about the American Revolution is coming. Without excluding the largest and most powerful commercial elements engaged in the import-export business. By expropriating the wealth of the principal enemies of the people, the Brazilian Revolution was able to hit them at their vital center with preferential and systemic attacks on the banking network. That is to say, the most telling blows were leveled at businessmen's nerve system. Interesting. Bank robberies carried out by the Brazilian urban guerrillas hurt big business and others. The foreign companies which issue and reissue the banking capital, the imperialist companies, the federal and state governments, all of them are systematically expropriated as of now. The fruit of these expropriations have been devoted to the task of learning and perfecting urban guerrilla techniques, the purchase, production, and transportation of weapons and ammunition for the rural areas, the security precautions of the guerrillas, the daily maintenance of the fighters, those who have been liberated from prison by armed force, those who have been wounded, those who are being prosecuted by the police, and to any kind of problem concerning comrades liberated from jail or assassinated by the police in the military dictatorship. A tremendous cost of the Revolutionary War must fall upon the big business, on the imperialists, on the landowners, and the government too, both federal and state, since they are all exploiters and oppressors of the people. Men of the government, agents of the dictatorship, and of foreign imperialism, especially must pay with their lives for the crimes they have committed against the people. In Brazil, the number of violent actions carried out by the urban guerrillas, including executions, explosions, seizures of weapons, ammunition and explosives, assaults on banks and prisons, it is significant enough to leave no room for doubt as to the actual aims of the revolutionaries. All are witnesses to the fact that we are in full revolutionary war and that this war can only be waged by violent means. Saving the white race can only be by violent means, comrades. I just don't see how we can do it. I watch Alex Jones and all these other guys on there. You know, he says, wake up, get off your ass and do something. And obviously Alex Jones is not condoning violence. You know, I think he, more than anything, just says, you know, wake up your neighbor and this and that. People don't want to be woken up. But people like him think that we can change things. Get the right people in office. That'll never happen. This is the only reason why the urban guerrillas use armed struggle and why he continues to concentrate his efforts on the physical extermination of the agents of repression and to dedicate 24 hours a day to expropriation from the people's exploiters. Technical preparation of the urban guerrilla. No one can become an urban guerrilla without paying special attention to technical preparation. The technical preparation of the urban guerrilla runs from the concern of his physical condition to a knowledge of an apprenticeship in professions and skills of all kinds, particularly manual skills. The urban guerrilla can have a strong physical constitution only if he trains systematically. He cannot be a good fighter if he has not learned the art of fighting. For that reason, the urban guerrilla must learn and practice various forms of unarmed fighting, of attack and personal defense. Other
other useful forms of physical preparation are hiking, camping, practice of survival in the woods, mountain climbing, rowing, swimming, skin diving, whatever. Training as a frogman, fishing, harpooning, hunting of birds and small animals and big game. It is very important to know how to drive a car. I don't think we have a problem with that. Pilot a plane, that's another matter. Handle a boat, a sailboat, understand mechanics, radio, telephone, electricity, and have some knowledge of electronic techniques. It is also important to have a knowledge of topographical information, to be able to determine one's position by instruments or other available resources, to calculate distances and make maps and plans, draw the scale, make timings, whatever that means, and work with an angle protractor and a compass. A knowledge of chemistry, absolutely. Of color combination and stamp making. Of mastery of skills of calligraphy and the copying of letters and other techniques are part of the technical preparation of the urban guerrilla, who was obliged to falsify documents in order to live within a society that he seeks to destroy. I know nothing about forging documents. In the area of makeshift medicine, the urban guerrilla has a special role of being a doctor, understanding medicine, nursing, pharmacology, drugs, basic surgery, and emergency first aid. The basic question in the technical preparation of the urban guerrilla is nevertheless to know how to handle weapons such as a submachine gun, a revolver, automatic pistol, and the FAL, whatever that is. Various types of shotguns, carbines, mortars, bazookas. You're not going to have any bazookas. Be great if you had a mortar. Fuck shit up and people won't know where it's coming from. Mortar would be awesome. A knowledge of various types of ammunition and explosives is another aspect to consider. Among the explosives, dynamite must be well understood. The use of incendiary bombs, smoke bombs, and other types is also indispensable prior training. To know how to improvise and repair weapons, prepare Molotov cocktails, grenades, mines, homemade destructive devices, how to blow up bridges and tear up and put out of service railroads and rail cars. These are necessities in the technical preparation in an urban guerrilla that can never be considered unimportant. The highest level of preparation for an urban guerrilla is the training camp for technical training. But only the guerrilla who has already passed a preliminary examination can go to this school. That is to say, one who has passed the test of fire and revolutionary action in actual combat against the enemy. These guys got to prove themselves in combat before they can receive prior training? I don't know if I agree with that. I'm telling you right now, the system is not even hiding it anymore. Been doing some research over the weekend about this chemtrail shit. Very surprised to hear that it's happening all over the Western world. They're not seen in China. They're not seen in India. Only the West. And you consider statements like from Ted Turner calling us useful feeders. He's calling all of us that. But I do acknowledge there are useless eaters on the planet. I do acknowledge that we could, we're 6.8 billion people now, we could stand to lose 3.8 billion easily.
According to the Georgia Guidestones in Elberton, Georgia, this is that's as maintain a global population no more than 500 million. So, I don't think that's good. What's the population of Chicago going to be, 200? You know, like, I mean, you're still going to have people all over the planet, right? Wall Street wrote me an email the other day. He says, you know, I was talking about the oil that's seeping out of the Gulf. And all that oil, all those millions of gallons drifting into the Atlantic. And I put before him the hypothesis of that, all that oil disrupting the North Atlantic conveyor system. Water in the equator portion of the world drifts to the north. When it gets up right around Iceland and Greenland, it becomes salinated? Becomes heavy because it's cold, and then it sinks. And then there's an undercurrent hundreds of feet under the ocean surface that drifts the water back south. That's the reason why Europe has pretty temperate climates. If that's disrupted, it will trigger an ice age. Now, they've been talking about global warming triggering an ice age all this time. You know, all this melting glaciers are going to dump all that salt into the North Atlantic conveyor system or whatever, and it'll shut off. I guess that wasn't happening fast enough. It's interesting that, I don't know who it was, was it the Tony Hayward guy who took out some insurance on that rig 2 weeks before it busted? And then somebody, I forgot what two companies there was that sold all their stock right before, 2 weeks before the accident. And they made a lot of money. Always follow the money. Just like that Larry Silverstein, who bought the World Trade Center and then had it insured. You know, I don't know how many, I think he owned not just building 1 and 2, I think he owned 7 and a couple other buildings. But all he did was put a down payment on it. He didn't even finish paying it off yet. But the insurance paid that off for him and some other monies. I mean, he, because of the 9/11 catastrophe, that Larry Silverstein made a lot of money. And I'm not saying he's the one who orchestrated it. I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't a Zionist thing. I really believe that. I'm sure the Mossad had a hand in it. So did our CIA. So did MI6 and 5. So follow the money. But Wall Street said in that reply to the email I sent them, he's like, listen, every 10 or 12,000 years, the Earth has to shake off all of its fleas. And non-whites just breed way too fast. Which is why, you know, that's another thing, man. You watch all these fucking videos, man. You hardly see any people of color being alarmed by anything. Oh, yeah, Al Sharpton get a lot of black people riled up about this school in Harlem's not doing something, or this school in Chicago's not letting little Quanisha Bailey do something, and he does a photo op with Quanisha Bailey's mother and says, oh, this is racism, and that don't count. Black people and Hispanics and most Asians don't give a damn about, you know, the global elitists and what to do. They don't give a damn about the New World Order. I heard KRS-One or Black Rapper talk about it. I heard Professor Griff, part of the rap group Public Enemy, talk about it. That's great. Where's everyone else at? Shows more than anything. So white people will question shit always. For the most part. They've done a good job of dumbing us down. But we will question things. Black and brown, they don't. They're more preoccupied with the NBA. They're more preoccupied with their libido. They're more preoccupied with having their car all dressed up in detail so they can style and profile. So they can have their speakers booming that rap shit. They don't care about this shit. And that makes them the perfect slaves. And the global elitist, it seems to me, thinks that they would be great replacements for the white people. The Mexicans can be the hard workers and laborers, and blacks can fill in that role. Hindus and Pakistanis can do all the white collar jobs that white people once did, and the Asians. I really believe that. Could I be wrong? Of course I could be wrong, but I believe there's some of that in there. Why else would they be dropping chemtrails only on Western nations? Why is it that it's the sperm count of Western man that's falling and nowhere else? They're stealing water from the United States aquifers, the one out west, and the one in Michigan, and that water's leaving the country. Well, this has been Radio Insurgent, Ghost Wolf Radio, Radio Rahola, Werewolf Radio. For the white working class, white proletariat, white guerrillas. I'm your host, Michael Myers. We'll be back with you again. So I bid you all a hearty 14 words, and we must secure the existence of our people and the future for white children.
Yeah, Slingblade, thanks you there for that applause. And that's about it for today. Don't forget, you're not a white nationalist. You're a white separatist, or you're an Aryan soldier, or you're a pan-Aryan, or pan-white. That's what it is. Here's a little thought for you. I was talking the other day to my neighbor, and I've been seeing black squirrels all over the place. And I mentioned to him, you know, I never saw a black squirrel around here when I was a kid. He said, yeah, the brown squirrels are pretty much the north side of town. They've been pushed back by the black squirrels. And I thought, man, that's really interesting. Is that an allegory for us? That now you don't see any brown squirrels in the southern part of the town or the county? And the black squirrels have taken over. So there you go. Among the animal kingdom. 14-5. And shut up.
Tell us a bit more about this Mormonism thing.
Yeah, Patrick, tell us.
Okay, but I keep telling you, my name's not Patrick, it's Kyle.
I'm not talking to you, Patrick. I'm talking to the Patrick standing next to you.
My name's Bryce.
Ah, quit your stalling, Patrick.
Yeah, cut the jibber-jabber and save our souls already, Patrick.
Okay, well, like I said, God revealed to Joseph Smith that the true church ceased to exist after the death of the apostles, and that Joseph Smith was going to restore the one true church.
Yes, and you can know that the Mormon church is the one true church because we always have 12 living apostles.
Let me get this straight.
Yeah, let's iron this one right out, Patrick.
According to the Mormon Church, you don't have the true church without 12 living apostles.
That's right.
But also according to the Mormon Church, the Apostle John never died and is, in fact, still roaming this earth.
According to Section 7 of Doctrines and Covenants, that's correct.
Patrick, Is St. John the Evangelist currently an apostle in the Mormon Church?
No, he's not.
Speak up, Patrick.
Yeah, Patrick, we can't hear you beneath the sound of your prophet's mountainous continuity error.
I don't think it's an error, it's just,
Oh, really, Patrick?
Come on, Patrick.
So you're telling me that after 1,800 years with no church to worship in, no fellow believers to gather with, no one to preach to, baptize, commune, or consecrate, that the disciple whom Jesus loved was too busy tap-dancing atop a pile of yak manure to claim the spot Jesus gave him on the fresh rebooted apostolic roster?
I don't know about the yak manure thing.
And you're also telling me that in the subsequent time since the one true church awoke from its near 2,000-year coma, that the guy who wrote 5 books of the Bible couldn't even be bothered to show up at your Salt Lake City headquarters for an official meet and greet?
I
tell you what, Patrick.
Yeah, turn on your listening ears, Patrick.
Let's make a deal, Patrick.
Oh, we're about to go Monty Hall on you, Patrick.
When it comes to your supposed one true church and the disciple whom Jesus loved, we'll convert to Mormonism as soon as he does.
And so much for Christian insanity, or Mormon insanity, or Jewish insanity, or Islamic insanity. It goes on and on and on.